Welcome back to the Brian Hughes podcast, or Conversations with Brian Hughes, or some other name we haven't quite come up with yet. As we've told you, if you've listened to our previous episodes, we're still figuring this out. We're still trying to land on what it's going to be. Maybe, who knows, by the time you hear this, we will have figured it out. But we always want your feedback, not just on what you're experiencing and the things you're getting from this, but any way you feel like it could be more valuable to you, or if you just have an opinion on what we could call it, you can let us know. And you can find this wherever you listen to podcasts. We hope that you'll share it. You'll send it out to people that you love. And as I've said a few times now, people you don't love, anybody, send it out to them all so they can experience this as well. We are right in the middle of this series we're doing called Into the Wild, which is actually following what our church, Passion Community Church, is doing on a Sunday morning. It's not always going to be that, but just in case you miss sort of the point or sort of the mission or ethos of this podcast, what it's going to be, you can check out our first episode to get more information about that. But this week, as I said, we're going to continue Into the Wild, and we're actually going to talk about the man himself, Jesus. And Brian, you gave us a great message on that on Sunday. And as always, if you, the listener, you want to check it out, you can go to our website, passioncommunitychurch.com or passioncommunity.com.
Passioncommunity.com. It's a new URL.
Passioncommunity.com. You can get our message archive there, and you really should check it out because we're not going to stick to that entirely, but of course, it's going to be helpful context. I am curious, though. You have a plan of something you want to talk about, but I want to ask you a question that I didn't tell you before we started recording.
I can't wait.
It's a question I've always had about this particular story. And then, you know, you can take us wherever you'd like, but right. I'm just curious how you would answer this, because Jesus being tempted in the wilderness is a famous story that has a lot to teach us, which again, you're going to get to. But I've always wondered, like, why? Why does Jesus actually feel the need to do this? Is it really, I'm not going to lead you too far down a road, but is it really because he felt like that was going to be what prepared him best for his ministry? Was it just to show his contemporaries and you and I way down the road how you might be able to respond in the moment of temptation? What would be your answer to why Jesus would actually take this experience upon himself in the first place?
Well, I'm going to give you my version of the answer to the question. I thought you were going to ask a different question, which I have talked about before. I didn't deal with this on Sunday. There's a lot, you know, anytime you tell a story like this, you can't deal with all of it. And on my list of questions, when I get to heaven, will be the way that this gets phrased in Luke is that Jesus went into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And then we have these three experiences where Jesus has this conversation with Satan, the tempter, the devil, the whatever. He goes by a lot of names. Even in Luke, he goes by multiple names. And the question I have that I can't answer is, why is Jesus having a conversation with him in the first place?
Right. Yeah.
Why is he even following the devil into the And this goes alongside of the same – it's the same question as – if I could just digress, since we've not really started yet, is why is God having a conversation with the devil in the Job narrative?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It feels like they like two old pals sitting at a bar
– make a deal.
Making a bet.
Mm-hmm.
And the devil says, I bet you that I can make Job curse you. And God's like, well, I'll take that bet.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. And this is the same situation I have here. It doesn't seem to – I just don't understand why Jesus is following the devil at all. Now, to the greater – to your question, which I think is a more relevant question because I can't answer the first one. But this one where you say, well, what was Jesus's point? Why would he even do this? And I think, you know, some people would make the argument that Jesus did it because he wanted to prove to us that this is how you manage, and that's what I talked about on Sunday, was how do you navigate temptation? Jesus uses these tools, he's firm in his identity, he quotes scripture a lot, blah, 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 he's able to combat, you know, all the things. But I think one could make the case that as Jesus is fully God, I even said this part, as Jesus is fully God, he also empties himself of divinity, and he is also fully human.
Yeah.
And as a human being, Jesus experienced many of the same feelings that we have, like pain and loss and right. so.
Mm-hmm.
But what we don't ever actually talk about is what kind of emotions did Jesus experience? Like, did he ever experience fear? We know that he experienced a sense of distance from God
right.
as he cries out, why have you forsaken me? So we know some of the human emotion that we would not usually allocate to the divine.
Right.
We know he experienced that.
Right. In the garden, too.
In the garden. Yeah. That's right. He's crying out, God, please don't let this, please let me take a pass on this. Let right. this cup pass from me, right?
Right.
And he's sweating blood and all the things. So I want, that was all a big preface to say, because there will be plenty of people who will say, I have lost my mind. Is it possible that this being tested was not, had nothing to do with God knowing whether or not Jesus could fight temptation as much as it was Jesus knowing if Jesus could fight temptation?
Hmm.
As a setup to his own ministry, he knew what he was about to have to endure, and he had to think, do I really have this in me? And so he goes on a fast for 40 days.
Yeah.
And even if you're not like a sugar junkie like me,
right.
I don't care who you are.
Right.
You know, you're literally starving.
Mm-hmm.
After 40 days, you're literally starving. So he puts himself in a position where he knows the temptation is real. Because I think a lot of people read this story. It's a great question you're asking. A lot of people read this story and they're like, wink and half a smile. I mean, he's God.
Right.
Come on.
There's no real risk.
He's no real temptation here.
Yeah.
He's not really being tested. So Jesus literally starves himself to death. And I wonder, I don't know, but I wonder if part of the point was Jesus proving to Jesus, I got this.
Yeah.
I got this.
It's not a path I considered, which is really cool. I think that if what we believe about Jesus is that he was somehow 100% God and 100% a man, really the only way to be 100%
right.
a man would be, part of that would be the not knowing completely
right.
until you were in the situation.
Right. Right. I mean, it's all a joke if Jesus really wasn't tempted.
Right.
The whole thing is a farce if it were. So each of the temptations that the tempter, the devil, puts in front of Jesus, by definition, has to be desirable to him.
Right.
And he's able to resist him. The other thing that this story proves, which I also did not talk about, is that temptation itself is not a sin. The question is not, is it okay to, is it, the question is not, am I going to be tempted? I'm going to be tempted. And since Jesus, we believe, lived a sinless life, his temptation did not wreck his record.
Right.
It's his ability to fight temptation and win is what kept his spotless record.
Yeah.
So the Bible says, resist the devil. I think it's James who says this, resist the devil and he will flee from you.
Mm.
This is what Jesus proved. Because mm-hmm. because after the third temptation, the devil left.
Literally left.
Literally yeah. left.
Yeah. Yeah. So as is always the case with Jesus, you know, it can be multiple things
sure,
that are
of
being
course.
Accomplished.
Of course.
But yeah, no, it's something I've always just been curious of because, mm-hmm. again, it's one of those stories that it just feels kind of odd when you read it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not, of course, a thing that a lot of the times we say that he was doing it to prepare himself for his ministry that was about to begin.
Right.
And of course, I do believe that. But then I think about me or anyone else I know that's ever gone into ministry. And we don't, obviously, I don't even mean fasting for 40 days and going in the wilderness.
Right.
But we don't put ourselves through what we might even consider our extreme paces
right.
before we begin, really. At least not willingly.
Right.
Maybe, you know, our life has brought us there. But we don't tend to be like, am I sure I'm ready for ministry?
Right.
Let me go do this
right.
extreme thing and figure it out. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It's yet another great example by Jesus. Well, let's move on to some of the thoughts that you have about more to the story. Like you said, we talked on Sunday, you talked on Sunday about sort of the three types of temptation that Jesus found himself in and how he resisted, and it was awesome. Again, you can go back and listen to that anytime, but there's more temptation than just that, and then we deal with, and some specifics as well. So we'd love to hear from you on more thoughts on that and where you've experienced this, and continue the conversation that way.
I think, you know, there are an infinite number of ways to be tempted, but there are some common groupings of temptation. Mm-hmm. And I didn't use the word guardrail, but I think it's appropriate for us to talk about what are some practical guardrails to put in place around certain areas that are sort of widespread or common areas where people get into trouble, where the tempter comes and says, "This is you. This will be good for you." How do you avoid that? So I thought I would name a few of these categories. And this is not an exhaustive list. I think, like I said, there's an infinite number of them. Money would be a big one. And I think lots and lots of people, many people get in trouble when it comes to money.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it is sin of our own making. Like we like to offload our financial problems as if it wasn't our fault.
Right.
Like, you know, I lost my job, or, you know, my income just didn't keep up with my expenses, or these darn kids are, you know, eating me out of house and home.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. But the truth for most of us is, and this includes me, is that we tend to outpace our income with spending. And we do it, we try to rationalize it, but we often do it, there's a sin behind it. Like, I'm looking around and people have more than me, and I'm going to try to, you know, look like I'm keeping up with them.
Envy. Yeah.
Like envy. Right. I lived that life. I know what that's like. So what are the guardrails that we can put around our finances? And they're not complicated. They're a little hard to stick to, but once you've done it, I think you can have a hard and fast rule that says I will not spend more than I make. I refuse to do that. So when you set that kind of a guardrail up and you run out of money, you just stop. Better yet, you create an actual budget that ensures that you will not outspend what you bring in. That includes the discipline of establishing an emergency fund. I love the way Dave, and we don't have time to like go deep into this. I'm just going to give a few things. I love the way Dave Ramsey talks about this. He says an emergency fund is for emergencies. And he comes up with a few like crazy examples of what is not an emergency. You know, they're having a great sale on new cars, and this is really important. That is not an emergency.
Right.
And, you know, whatever. There's a thousand ways, you know, to talk about what's not emergency. He says, you have to be able to segregate this as a legitimate emergency. If you're married, which I'm married, Elijah, you're married, and part of the guardrail is, in order to spend out of the emergency fund, Susan and I must agree on it.
Yeah.
We must agree. I don't get to just go tap into our emergency fund without her. So now part of the guardrail, because I'm really good at, Susan often tells me I should have been a lawyer. I'm really good at making an argument.
Yeah.
And especially if I'm the only one that I have to argue to, dude, I can rationalize anything.
Oh, yeah.
But when I have to rationalize, she's a little bit of a harder nut to crack. So when I've got to convince her, listen, it's serious. Buying this new TV, it's an emergency because it has to happen. They've never been this cheap. It would be bad stewardship not yeah, right. to buy yeah, yeah, this right. new TV.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and after a while, you know, you just know not to make the case. Like, she's going to look at you like, really?
You're right.
You even think that this is going to win the argument? So that's helpful when you have another voice. So what about somebody who's not married? Well, it's also not that complicated. You find a trusted friend. And you say, would you be willing to help be the gatekeeper with me on my emergency fund? It's still my money, But I'm asking you to be a voice that I'm going to come to if it's if I think this is an emergency and I'm going to spend money out of my emergency fund. I'm just asking you to let me make a case to you, and you tell me if you can throw the flag if you think this is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have, again, if somebody like me, I can rationalize to myself until I have convinced myself.
Oh yeah.
Of anything.
Yep.
So because I know that, if I get another trusted voice around me, even if it's if you're not married, if it's not your spouse, then you make the case to them, and you give them permission to say, I'm just going to throw the flag here. You're not being smart.
Yeah.
So I think you can do that too. Another key guardrail when it comes to finances is about debt. I got in trouble with debt a long time ago. I went through a complete financial meltdown. It's probably been 25 years. And when I emerged from it, I made some promises to myself. Susan, I made some promises to her too. And we just had some agreements. I don't borrow anything now. I don't borrow money on anything that is going to depreciate. That's just a rule for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have driven, you've seen some of the cars I've driven. I've driven some true legit pieces of junk.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to borrow money to buy a car.
Right.
It's going to lose value, not gain value. I'm just not going to do that. So I will buy whatever the amount of cash I have allows me to buy, and that's it. I will borrow money for things that appreciate. So I'll borrow money to buy a house or something like that.
Like land.
Land.
Right.
But I'm not going to borrow money. That's just a rule for me. Another rule is I have a credit card. I like, I actually like rewards. We travel some on rewards and whatever, but I do not ever carry a balance on a credit card. I haven't paid interest on a credit card in probably 20 years.
Hmm.
I pay the entire bill every month. And if I can't do that, like we're cutting credit cards up. If that happens, if that ever happened again, if we missed a month of, if I had to make a minimum payment, I'm done. Well, I'm done. Because it's a stupid amount of interest, number one. But number two, right. It's a red flag. You are not able to pay your bills if you have to do that. So we just don't. And I think for me also when it comes to money, a guardrail is, am I being generous? Again, this is a conversation we can make all in itself. But if I am not able to tithe to my local church, and for me, we also give above that to some to the church, but also some other places. Also, frankly, we reserve a little bit of money every month to help somebody around us. We're just looking for ways to do that. And if I can't do that for me, then my money is not in check. Now, just to be fair, I'm not sure I could have done that when I was 23. Like when you're on my side of life, you can afford it. Time has allowed me to do some really stupid things, but also if I've played it smart for a long time, you just have a little bit more capacity.
Right.
When I was 23, I was so broke. I just don't know if I could have. I know I couldn't have given like I give today.
Yeah.
But for me, there's a place where generosity just must be in play, and tithing was always in play. But being generous above that.
Right.
So those are guardrails for me around finances that are important.
Yeah.
And then I think another big bucket is sexual temptation.
Mm.
This is a big thing for me, and if you want to talk about this too,
sure,
it's great. But I think that lots and lots of people get in trouble here because they don't put effective guardrails
right
around them. So just a couple of guardrails for me. Number one, for me, this just seems silly to have to say it, but I've seen many people, some people I really, really was close to, get in trouble because of this simple guardrail. I don't travel with another woman that I'm not married, that's not Susan, that's just me and this other person. If I do, if we do like a conference, like, you know, Elijah, right. You're on my mm-hmm. team, and if we go to a conference or something, like I'm really close friends with my friend Beth Stoddard.
Yeah.
Beth and I would never go to an out-of-town conference together, just the two of us,
right.
Ever.
Right.
And we trust each other implicitly, and our spouses, everybody's good.
Yeah.
But that's just stupid. It's just a dumb idea, and everybody knows that, except some people don't know that.
Right.
I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations with people whose lives were in complete meltdown because one of the spouses worked for a company and they traveled with a person of the opposite sex, just the two of them, mm-hmm. to go to some. I'd quit my job before I did that. I would just say, if this is part of the job, that's a deal killer. I'm out.
Yeah.
And I do imagine, not that I'm casting judgment on anybody here, having lived not that scenario, but just I have a long history with sexual temptation and things like that. But I think this applies to all temptation. But I feel like really especially sexual sin, which is mm-hmm. what I lived through, that like it – I mean it takes but a moment. And you always enter situations either not expecting anything happen, it just catches you completely off guard, or sort of too, I would say, arrogant in your own ability to mm-hmm. say, like, maybe other people will struggle with that, but not me.
Yeah.
And so it might, what you're saying might sound extreme to somebody out there, but I mean, again, having literally lived it just with pornography, that's what I struggled with for a long time. Like I can't stress enough just how sudden it can be.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you feel like you're in a great place.
That's right.
It takes a second. It takes a look. It takes a whatever. And you can be in a, before you know it, you're in a spot you don't want to be.
That's right.
So, yeah, I think this is a, I want to ask you a question. I don't mean to
go ahead.
You off, but yeah, it's related to this. It's related to any temptation, really. One of the things when I've, just very briefly, since I've come through this addiction that I've had, of course, I've had the opportunity to share with other guys, because that's another thing. I wouldn't have this conversation
that's right.
with a woman for all the reasons we're talking
about.
One-on-one. But when I have this conversation with guys one-on-one, the thing I try to tell them, particularly when it relates to sexual sin, this will lead to my question, is really, man, whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes.
To avoid this.
That's right.
There is nothing that is too valuable or too sacred to you that you need to keep, that you should try and justify to keep around if it's going to lead you down this road.
That's right.
And I'm like, you know, because you got the phones now, which is really easy and all that. And like, if it's, go get a flip phone.
Yeah.
That's what it takes. Make the sacrifice, get a flip phone.
Yeah.
If you're using this stuff, if your TV is screwing you up, throw the TV out the window. Like, that's literally what I say. And again, it sounds extreme, but like, these kind of things can completely wreck your life.
Well, I know you want to ask a question, but you know what sounds extreme? If your right hand causes you to sin,
right.
cut it off.
Exactly.
That's what Jesus said.
Exactly.
So tossing your TV out the window seems a small price to pay rather than taking a machete
right.
to your left shoulder.
Right. And my question really is would you apply that same mentality to really any temptation like this?
I think absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I agree. I would apply it to any temptation. I think that everybody has, and maybe this is not true, but I'm just going to say it. I think everybody has what I would call, quote unquote, a drug of choice.
Right.
I mentioned this last time or time before, whatever. I have this really love-hate relationship with sugar, and sugar's really bad for me. And I have this, it's very hard. I have a really bad addiction to sugar.
Yeah.
And as I fight that, I do think if I'm going to rank some stuff, you know, giving in to the holy hot now sign at Krispy Kreme and eating a dozen is probably not the same level as cheating on my wife. Let's just agree to
that. Yes.
So I'm not sure I'd cut off my left arm
right.
to avoid Krispy Kreme, although I deliberately don't drive past the place.
Right.
If Krispy Kreme moves to Powhatan, I have to move. I literally cannot. cannot live.
Yeah,
that closes like a drug dealer.
Uh-huh.
But I literally would do anything that I had to do to make sure that I did not fall prey to cheating on my wife.
Yeah.
So some of the things I say about this might seem old school to people or extreme, but for me, it's just worth it. It's just completely worth it. So I keep, I have covenant eyes on all my devices. I've talked about this with folks because this has been a temptation for me. I don't think, I didn't travel down this path as far as you did, but I think for many, many guys, this is the unspoken thing. And I'm just determined to talk about it.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because first of all, I want particularly guys and women fall prey to pornography too, but I want people to know you are not alone. As a matter of fact, sadly, you are part of a multi-billion-dollar industry
mm-hmm.
that has sucked you in and you can get out. But the way to part, you have to have mechanisms. You have to have guardrails. And because it's just so easy. So I've covenanted eyes on all my devices. I want to tell a quick story about this. I was, which I think you've heard, Elijah, but I have an accountability partner who's one of my closest friends, and he's a pastor of another church. And I bought a new computer. This has been a few years ago. I got a new computer. And I didn't know this at the time. When I was defunding all the programs, all the software off of my old computer, he got an alert from Covenant Eyes that said, hey, Brian has taken Covenant Eyes off of his computer.
Yeah.
I didn't know he would get. So I'm sitting, Susan and I were working together. We were side by side. And we both had our laptops open, and she was doing one thing, and I was doing something else, whatever. And my phone rang, and it was him. And it was my buddy Jeff. And I answered the phone, and Jeff says, hey, man. He says, he did not know I was sitting next to Susan. I didn't tell him. So he says, hey, man, I just want to tell you I got this alert, and what's going on? I said, oh, it's no problem, man. I bought another laptop, and I'm getting ready to load it on my new laptop. And he says, oh, okay, that's cool. Yeah, it's no problem. So we made a little small talk. He gets off the phone. Again, I didn't tell him I was sitting next to Susan. As soon as I hung up the phone with him, Susan's phone rang. It was Jeff. Wow. And Jeff says to her, hey, I just got off the phone with Brian, and he told me that he took Covenant Eyes off his computer because he was buying a new computer, and I just wanted to call you and verify that he's telling me the truth.
Mm.
And some people would be offended by that. They'd say, how can he possibly not trust you? The whole point of Covenant Eyes is because I'm not worthy of the trust.
Yeah.
I told my small group this a couple weeks ago. I said, the second you think you are incapable of that kind of sin, you're already in trouble.
Yep.
You just don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think people don't realize that people think that I'm just, I think some people don't think I'm being honest when I say this. I am fully capable of wrecking my marriage. I'm 1,000% capable of it. I'm not the guy I wish I was. I'm not the guy some people think I am. The bad news is neither are you, whoever you are.
Right.
Because we're all capable. Every mm-hmm. last one of us is capable. I wish I didn't have to have the guardrail. I wish I could say I always do the right thing just because it's the right thing to do. But sometimes I do the right thing because I'm going to get caught.
Right.
That's what Covenant Eyes is about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why I have it on all my devices.
Yeah.
And if that's what it takes, to your point, if that's what it takes, so be it. Cost me $18.99 a month or something like that. If it cost me $100 a month, I'd spend it. That doesn't matter to me. I'm going to get this right.
Yeah, small price to pay.
Small price.
When you consider the alternative.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I think those kinds of things. I also think having some people around you, I guess this is the last thing I'll say about this part. There's a lot we could say about it, is that having some people around you who are able to pull you aside and name it and say, hey, man, something about the way you're having this conversation with this person over here seems fishy to me. It seems sketchy, and you need to back away. I talked about in this message that having, you know, staying away from the gray area. The gray area is where the enemy wants you. Sometimes you tiptoe your way there, and there might be some nudges inside of you, but you ignore them or you rationalize them. And having a few people around you that can pull you aside, and I'm not talking about humiliate you in front of people, but grab you privately and say, hey, I care about you, and I see something, and I need to say it to you. And having those people in your life, for me, they're invaluable,
mm-hmm.
just invaluable. So that's an important guardrail.
Yeah.
I also think, if I could just speak briefly about this big area of thought. People think that if I think it but don't do it, I have won.
Mm.
But I want to have, as the Bible says, the mind of Christ. I want my thoughts to be pure, not just my actions to be pure.
Yeah.
And so Paul has this statement where he says, it's in Philippians 4, and he gives this list, and he says, whatever is noble, whatever is pure, whatever is praiseworthy, if anything is beautiful, and he gives this whole list. And then he finishes by saying, think on these things. And what he's saying is, first of all, you can control what you think about.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, since you can control what you think about stuff that's going to build you up instead of stuff that's going to destroy you. So I find myself often having to say, no, you're going to redirect your thoughts. You're not going to think about that. And that's, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about sexual sin, but it's also about envy for me.
Yeah.
It's about, gosh, I wish I had what that guy had. Man, that sure is nice. And, you know, all those things. And I can say, no. Let's turn your thought to this. You have an amazing life.
Mm.
Look at all that stuff. Look mm-hmm. at all the. Look at how God has blessed you. Look at the kind of influence you've had. Look at your grandkids. Look at your. And instead of thinking about what I don't have, which is a temptation for me,
right?
I'm going to direct my thoughts to what God has already blessed me with in my life. And if I don't get one more blessing, that's enough.
Right.
I got enough.
None of the blessings you have were promised.
That's right.
So
they're all gifts.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important part. And just a couple other quick ones, and because we're kind of running short on time here, I think that there is a big temptation around honesty.
Yes.
And we talked about this a little bit before we started recording. I think people, there are all kinds of reasons that people want, that people are tempted to be dishonest. I was going to say want. Nobody wants to be dishonest, but we're tempted to be dishonest. Sometimes we're dishonest because we didn't do what we said we were going to do, and we think, well, I can get away with one here.
Right.
Sometimes we're dishonest because we want to look better than we really are,
mm-hmm.
right? And then there are people, I've known a few of these, who are dishonest, and there's no good reason why they're dishonest. They just lie.
Or for some reason.
Yeah. I had a good friend like this, who's still a good friend today, and I just pulled him aside one day, and I said, do you know that you lie a lot? And he, to his credit, he kind of admitted to it, and I said, I'm really trying to understand, can you help me understand why? And he said, I don't know. And I said, would you like to fix it? And he said, I would love to fix it. I said, okay, how about I call you out every time I see that you're not telling the truth? And he was committed to it. He said, I really don't want to be a dishonest person. I've lied for so long. I don't even know why I do it anymore. I just do it all the time. It's just habit.
Right.
So I called him every time he told an untruth. I called him. And do you know he really turned that around?
Wow.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
But it came from his commitment to it, and he allowed accountability.
Yeah, which is huge.
Which is huge. And then I guess, one big category that I think maybe fits all of them, but, there's a lot of temptation that is, built around this idea of selfishness. I want to be the kind of person that puts others first.
Mm-hmm.
As the Bible says, put the needs of others above your own.
Yeah.
And so, I want to build the guardrail for me around selfishness is this pervasive question that says, am I doing this? Is this something that will benefit other people, or is this just about me?
Yeah.
And I do think there are times when it looks like something is just about you. For example, you go on vacation, you're like, I just want to get away from it all. I would even make the case, and perhaps this is the lawyer in me, so maybe I need somebody to call me out on it. Jesus took time for rest and reflection. Because it was not for selfish reasons, because Jesus knew that in order for him to be the best he could be for people around him, he had to be healthy himself.
Right.
So even vacation, which looks like it's selfish, if you approach it in the right way, is really about you being the best you can be. It's the same thing with rest. Like, we champion Sabbath around here because that's the rhythm that God built into the thing, because you just can't work 7 days a week forever and actually give your best.
Right.
There's a lot of studies that are actually built around productivity, where when people rest, they're actually more productive as opposed to working all the time.
Right.
So, but I do want to make my motive, I want to make sure that my life is built around being a selfless person, not a selfish person. And I think there's a lot of temptation around that. The world is certainly, built around that. Putting the needs of others above your own is sort of becoming the antithesis to the way that the world operates these days.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, I do think that it's important for people to look at where is my temptation? This is really a critical question for people to ask. I talk about my drug of choice. You don't have to use that language. But whatever it is for you, what area of your life is the area where you are most susceptible to temptation? And critically, you must then say, what guardrails am I going to put around this area of my life to make sure that I am living the way that God wants me to live, an honorable life that cares about people around me and that isn't just doing things that are selfish? I think that's critically important. That's how we become more healthy.
It is. And all those thoughts are amazing. It's a conversation that we just have to have all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I mean, even consider the very first sin is,
that's right,
one of temptation and desire to have something you don't have or be more than you are and all that. So it's literally as old as time.
That's right.
being tempted. And so the more we can talk about it, the more we can help each other, the more we can put guardrails in place, the better we can all be. So appreciate all your thoughts on that. As always, I'm going to say this every time, but we had a lot more notes and there's a lot more we could talk about. But yeah, it's an amazing story. Jesus giving us this example in the desert. And thanks for all your thoughts on it, both on Sunday when you talked about it and here. As a reminder, you can share this out, especially if you know somebody who you feel like could benefit from just hearing the language about guardrails and getting a few examples, because we all struggle with something, as Brian said. So share this with them. Go to pashcommunity.com. We have resources there as well. Share the message, share all the things. So we can continue to help each other. And I hope you'll come back next time as we continue into the wild. Until then, though, we will see you later.